Welcome back to Philippine X and Wellness. You were just listening to or viewing a video montage of Ka Virgil's Kailukuan School of Indigenous Science, located in Walnut, California, east of Los Angeles. Returning from our break, I'm talking with Ka Virgil Mayor Apostol about cultural perspectives on wellness. Now, coming back into the break, I wanted to ask you, Ka Virgil, did you always share an interest in your family's healing traditions as a child, or was there actually an event or occurrence that sparked your desire to dive deeper into your healing roots? The reason why I'm asking this is because sometimes it's innate. Sometimes as children, we want to do other things, right? So this question might also be for folks within the diaspora who want to dive deeper into their family lineages, but maybe they don't have access due to being situated either oceans apart from their family, or maybe having parents that want to either not talk about it or leave it behind, and other reasons either consciously or unconsciously. So let's start with that. Did you always share an interest in your family's healing traditions, or was there something actually that sparked that?
Yeah, there are some factors involved. Okay. Let's go back to when I was born. I was born in 1964. Television was, there weren't too many stations back then. So we weren't like plastered in front of the TV, unless you're looking at just white noise, which was often the case. But then that's when our generation, we were really involved with community. The reason why I say that is because we interacted with each other. We played. We went out. We rode our bicycles. We had a fist fight. We whatever it is. We had some interaction, on a social level. Now that was the generation. But if we look at the generation now, what's happening? Everybody's like this, busy, busy, busy. There's a disconnect, unfortunately. I mean, I myself, I'm like this too, but at least I have an awareness. I know that. Oh, shoot. Like, okay. Put it down.
Tech break.
Okay. Now, going back to my growing up, because my Lola, she lived with us. People would come to the house, and I would always be by her side. That was my television, actually. Whatever she was doing, I was actually amazed. It was like, wow. And I guess you could say that from that time on, I already had some kind of interest because I was always there by her side when she would treat the people who came to see her. They had all these different ailments. Then, of course, growing up, then you start to do your own thing. Now, when I was in first year college, well, this was Philippine Union College, which is now called Adventist University of the Philippines. This is in Puting Kahoy, Silang, Cavite. From Manila, it's on your way going to the Taytay. But anyway, one of our roommates sprained his ankle while playing basketball. And they carried him in, and they asked me if I knew what to do. The doctor, the nurse, they weren't in. I guess it was like lunch break or something. But they weren't in, so they asked me if I knew what to do. And I looked at the ankle, and I could see that it was swollen. I asked for a bulb of ginger. Mm-hmm. So ran to the market, got a bulb of ginger, and I started to crush it and apply the juice onto the ankle. I started to manipulate. Mind you, this was my very first time to do something hands-on. But yet, I was wondering, how do I know how to do this? What is this knowledge that's coming out of me? But yet, here I was. I was systematically doing whatever was subconsciously ingrained into my mind, my brain, as a younger child. And of course, there was the element of pain, you know, as I was doing that. And everybody, you know, was kept on teasing him because he was squirming, you know, it was painful. But then everybody slipped into silence and just observing. And that's when I was realizing, like, this is very interesting. And it was during that, within that that time, that year, that I recognized, like, okay, I have some kind of talent, some kind of gift. Now, even to the point where I would hold us, like a little bottle of, it was a Chinese medicine.
Kind of like white flour?
Yeah, I mean, it was something else that was round.
Tiger Blood.
No, it wasn't Tiger Blood, it was something else. Mm-hmm. But I even made that into a necklace. It's something like this is a medicine bottle. So that's that's how much I was really into it. And if there was somebody who had whatever, I would say, oh, yeah, let me just put this on, do whatever. that was my early experience. It must have been like a couple years later. Somebody came to the house, and her ankle or something also was messed up. And so she came to the house, and she said she needed the treatment. I said, oh, yeah, notice in the room. Just go over there. And she said, no, I want you to do it. I go, no, notice here. She can do it. No, I need somebody with strong hands. She's still strong. No, I want you to do it because it runs in your blood. And the moment she said that, I was thinking, okay. It was as if she threw a lasso around my neck and I had no escape. So I just started to do the work, like I, you know, whatever came to me. And it was that time when Lola passed by and she stopped at the door. She was watching me. This is the first time that she saw me actually doing the work. She said, be careful or the pain might transfer to you. Again, at that time, I was like, well, okay. Let's do it with pain. And afterwards, you know, the lady said, well, get out. Now that you know, I'm saying it's, you know, magaling now. And she's saying it's okay now. And you know, that made me realize, okay, yeah. That kind of confirms that I do have something. But the thing that she said, that really made a very strong impact on my life in regards to what we loosely say, taking on the energy.
Yeah.
That really started to make me understand things on a more vibrational, energetic level, spiritual level. Mm-hmm. You know, those non-physical levels. And it was through that experience, it was as if that was already a form of protection for me. Because, you know, speaking, you know, from my own personal experience, I will tackle things, even if it's very emotional, but yet I'm able to maintain this veil in front. I can still see through, I can still sense and everything, but yet, whatever the person has, it is acknowledged that that is that person's and it's not mine. Because what happens oftentimes is the person, they become very, what's the word? Can't think of it now.
Entangled.
Not entangled, entangled, yes, that eventually happens. But it's because of their empathy. They become empathic.
Empathic?
Or empathetic? No.
Empathy.
Empathy, yeah.
Go ahead and try to describe it.
So basically what happens is that they open themselves up to relating with the person on what the pain is. They begin to want to take that pain away. And annoyingly, what happens is that they start to take in.
Internalize.
They internalize the vibrational frequency of whatever that person is experiencing. So basically, it's like taking on energy, like, you know, what people say on a very loosely. And one example was when there was one individual, before I worked on her, she warned me that she had a lot of negative energy within her. And she said that oftentimes people who worked on her, they often had to excuse themselves because they would take on that that gunk, and it was just too much for them to bear. And I was thinking, okay, by the time I was already slipping into that trance where everything's going in one ear and out the other. Afterwards, she was very surprised. She told me, oh, you're the first person who was able to endure the whole session without taking on my negative energy. And then she started to explain basically what happened was that she recently got married, and then 1 week after the marriage, her husband died in an accident. So that's very traumatic. Very tragic, very traumatic for her. So she was really, enduring this pain on a very deep level. And by the time, I had kind of worn out of my state of being, and suddenly I started to feel that pain. I started to feel that emotion. At the moment, I recognized that, I put back that shield, and I redirected conversation into one that helped her to think in a different way. Basically, what I said was, if your husband was here or was listening, do you think he would want you to continue to harbor these emotions, to continue to feel these things, or would he want you to learn to let these go or heal from them, and so that you can move on with your life? That's what came to me. That's what came out. That's what I presented, and it really helped her to. She said, "You know what? You're right. You're right. You're right." And hopefully by that time, it really helped her to move on, without having to hold on to something. Because that's what a lot of people, they become addicted to this pain. Mm-hmm. And this pain, I have coined the term soul pain transference. In her case, it was an experience. But yet when there's two different individuals, like, for example, myself and that individual, if I opened up myself, if I had the desire to alleviate that person's pain on an emotional level, physical level, mental level, what I'm doing is first of all, we're two souls, remember? What are we looking at the eyes? Therefore, we're communicating soul to soul. So in this case, whatever she's experiencing on that soul level, I'm now taking it on into my own soul being. And there are individuals who literally do that. Mm-hmm. There are individuals who do that. I had one friend. He was an older gentleman. We went to see this one woman for one thing, but then she was explaining that she had a painful wrist. So what did he do? He took the woman's wrist, put his index finger, then all of a sudden initiated a strong inhale with the intent of inhaling, taking in the pain. At the time, the woman was, I feel the pain leaving. But then all of a sudden, he said he started to feel it.
Mm.
Later on, I asked him, why do you do that? Why do you take the pain into your own body? His response was, well, how am I supposed to know if a successful healing took place?
Mm.
But it got me thinking, did a legitimate healing take place in the first place? The pain was merely transferred one person to another. So there was not really the true healing take place. Because what would happen if all of a sudden that vibration eventually decides, for whatever reason, like, I'm going to go back to that, you know, person.
Mm-hmm.
I did read something in this one book where there was one person, yeah, this was in Europe. She had rheumatoid arthritis. She went to one magnetic healer. So the magnetic healer took on that and healed her. And eventually what happened was that that healer moved to another country and eventually passed away. But according to the author, that negative vibration returned back to the original person. And then she got back that rheumatoid arthritis. And so, again, did a healing take place? No. It was merely transferred from one person to another. Even the person doesn't have any more symptoms. In a sense, you know, there is a healing that takes place, but overall, it really didn't, if we look at the whole scheme of things, because it was transferred to another person.
So there wasn't a known practice in when you are taking on that vibration or that energy, which essentially that's what it is. It's inflammation, it's a vibration, right? Lack of a better terminology, like a toxic vibration. When that person takes it on, there wasn't a practice to be able to release that toxic vibration.
Yes. And now that reminds me of another friend. He's actually a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
And his process of chiropractic work was kind of unique. First of all, he was a devotee of Sri Ma. She's considered the hugging mother. And his method of chiropractic work was for him to adjust the subluxation. And he said that sometimes there's associated karma that's tied in with the subluxation, and he would take it on. And I was wondering, like, oh, how does he do that? So there was one time when, you know, we used to trade a lot, and he would work on me, I would work on him. But every time he would do the adjustment, there would be silence, and he wouldn't be doing any type of manipulation. So I got curious one day, and I opened my eyes, and I saw him doing that number.
Yeah.
And the moment I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. He was doing some kind of processing to get it out of his own system. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's why even with the students, when I teach them, something that will help to rid of any negativity that they may have taken on or might be lingering in their etheric field.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Basically, I was just going to say it involves the breath and also understanding of the magnetic polarities and such. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I mean, just to add on to what you were saying, like you were talking about, you know, from that empathy perspective, because in my own work, a lot of my clients, part of the reason why they see me is because they're experiencing all these different emotions, which speaks to their level of empathy. Energies that they pick up from other people. And one of the tools that I use that has helped me a lot is the phrase care but not carry, because that's what we end up doing is taking on that energy. When you're able to look at it from that perspective, oh, wait, I can still care but not carry that energy that's being projected on. Like that allows you to create those healthy boundaries, which is essentially what you're speaking about when you were talking about with that woman who you were working with that had that negative energy, you created that boundary for yourself. And what I also noticed, what you did as well with that, and because one of the things that I also talk with about my clients, we're not the way we are because of our past. We are the way we are because of how we hold the past. Mm-hmm. And when we hold the past a certain way, it can take on these negative energies and project these negative energies to the people that are around. And what I heard you so eloquently share with us is that what you did was you allowed her to look at it in a different way so that she can hold it differently by saying, oh, would your husband want you to continue in this way? And presenting that perspective to her, she was actually able to hold it differently. And then when she was able to hold it differently, that negative energy was able to dissipate, which was really, again, it just speaks to all these different overlaps and practices, which I find awesome, just very, very, very curious, but also very, very, such a great thing.
Yes. That's why supposedly in the medical field, when the doctors or the interns, when they go through their practice, they are really taught to dissociate with the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So almost to the point where they may seem kind of cold.
Right.
And also one thing that they encourage is not to work on family members.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that attachment, and you know, it might mm-hmm. just be too much for them to bear emotionally.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you don't have a practice of creating those emotional boundaries, because as family members, we're so attached to, and we take things for granted because we are family and we may communicate differently. But being able to create those boundaries is such an important practice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kyle Virgil, as our community continues to search into their own family roots and what their healing and wellness practices might look like, what is your take on where they might be able to start, or where can they look? I know there's also, in the larger scheme of things, right, there's also a big commercialization that's happening in our health and wellness community, with even traditional practices being exploited at times, or other individuals being in this realm for purposes that are self-serving or exploitative, right, and profit-driven. So what is your advice on where our community can start when it comes to really looking into their own lineages within the health and wellness realm?
Good question. And I can maybe have some good answers. Well, let me start with how I experience my own process of learning and discovering. Okay. Sometimes I often joke with people, asking them, okay, how many of you know that I was born in the Philippines? A lot of people raise their hand. You know, I was born in Los Angeles, actually East LA, or what was then East LA. But then I grew up in San Diego. But then I also went to school in the Philippines. Now, I, just like a lot of us other philanthropists here, we experience a lot of this disconnect, this longing for discovering who we are, because our parents, you know, they wanted to assimilate. But yet for us, younger generation, or like first generation, for example, here in the U.S., you know, we have this longing to really discover what our roots are. So what I did, I started to do my own self-research. I started to hit the libraries. I mean, these days we have the internet. There's so much information. However, I still go to libraries because, especially back then, because we're talking about a lot of the older books in existence that actually did proper research and such. There's a lot of information out there. I started to Xerox everything, you know, photocopy. So I have notebooks of things that I've copied because I felt like, oh, this information is very helpful. That one's very helpful. Things that interested me or that I felt was very necessary to keep because I felt that, okay, this ties in somehow with something else. And so because of this accumulation, this gathering of knowledge, along with mingling with different elders as well, I would literally go to, you know, when I would drive around early in the morning, I would pass by a park. I would see a group of Filipinos. I would go over there. I would mingle with them. I'd talk with them, get to know them. And then I would present the questions, like if there's somebody who knew how to do or if there's somebody who knew the screen one. I met some of my teachers that way. It's not impossible to find somebody who has knowledge. Sometimes they would say, oh, yeah, go to Mangberto, you know, Nanay, Nina, or whatever, because they had some kind of knowledge. So what I did was I was going to the source. I was going to the source. Even if they had just a little tiny bit of knowledge, something that I explained even yesterday in class, where you may sometimes knowledge can come in, you know, in large form. Sometimes it's just bits and pieces. But what's happening is that you're starting to put things together like a puzzle. Then all of a sudden you have one little piece that's missing, like, what is this picture? What ties everything together? Then all of a sudden you meet one man, Apple, or even an Anthony or someone that all of a sudden comes up with this bit of knowledge. Boom. Now you have that little piece, and now you can see the whole picture of whatever it is. So that's why it's very important to keep that open-mindedness, to have that so-called lateral thinking, so that you can see all the interconnection of all of these different practices, as opposed to just saying, oh, I just want to be present myself a healer, so I'm going to put on wear a textile or something, and I'm a healer or whatever. I'm decolonized, things like that. And so that whole process of really opening up yourself to, as much as possible, going to the source. That's why when I would make my, when I was in the Philippines, I would travel. I would go seek people who had knowledge. Even when I go back, there's one time I just traveled by myself, just going all the remote places in the Philippines. There was even one time when some people, they actually got a little scared of me. They thought I was like an undercover. Yes. They literally told me to come back, but they went back to the city and inquired who I was. But then after that, it was established that I was a researcher in this case. Then they opened up and they introduced me to other healers and such. It's really that drive and what's in your heart. If you think that you can get everything for one person, then that's awesome. Granted that person has all the knowledge, but that's not usually the case. Just like bits and pieces of a puzzle, you may have to go to someone else in order to get a broader understanding of the knowledge, what you have or what you don't have, for example. Well, but then it starts to delve into the thing that you're talking about, like commercialism. And this is one thing that really it's like somebody scratching a chalkboard.
Yeah, for sure.
Social media. Yeah. That really, social media really reveals things. Really reveals things. It shows people's personality, their character. It could even reveal if they actually know their SHIT. The one of the things that happens is that they get so involved with the aesthetics. They get involved with the fantasy of being this, of being that, that they not that they lose track, because they never were on track in the first place. Oftentimes they want to portray themselves as something, but yet they never really did their work. That's why, for example, in the 90s, I had a premonition that the term healer was going to be abused in the future. And yes, it is. In this day and age, people are parading around saying what they're this and they're that. Now, it's not just necessarily evil. That's why I made it a point that I'm going to stick with our tradition, Jamblon, but yet those who I take under my wings and pass on the knowledge that they really understand that this really has to maintain a very strong base foundation so that you don't just go off and say, I mean, this, I mean that, but that you don't have foundation. There are people out there who are professing that are doing Ibub. And I would question, not that I'm trying to be sneaky about it, but out of curiosity, like, oh, really? Like, what did you learn from? What did they teach you? I just went to massage school. And I learned the massage. But I want to use the term healer because I'm Filipino.
Right.
Yeah. And so that is, that is not really the way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did not really go do the work. There was, should I even mention?
I usually call people. How about I'm going to ask the question, how can one be discerning to know who to study under? What are some things that they can look for?
There was something, this is actually on social media. Because the person was, actually it was Lynn Pacific Park. When she was in the Philippines just recently, she was pointing out we were in communication, but also in her post, she was mentioning how here are the people, these are the local people, and this person, is such and such, who had this, if we really consider it, this extraordinary body of knowledge. But yet, if you look at the individual, they were just in, t-shirt, shorts, slippers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't the, whatever.
Yeah.
These are, and that's why I wrote something like, what is a ninja? Is it a person who is wearing this black outfit, covering their face, and, they're throwing more chili beans in the stars?
Mm-hmm.
No, they're the person who's just out in the crowd, recognize them as such, but yet they have the knowledge. If it was a ninja, they'll be walking the crowd, all of a sudden they'll do their thing, and nobody would know what happened. So with the healers, there's a sense of humility. There's a sense of humility that's involved. Even myself, I don't go around calling myself a healer. If somebody else wants to call me that, that's fine. It's similar to Jesus. He didn't go around calling himself Christ or the Christ. But he said that it was the people who were calling him that. This sense of humility is very important because sometimes... And also the ego. The ego is another thing that we have to really keep in check. And this can branch out in many different ways. If we're doing the healing work and we have this ego, sometimes let me put it in a story form. One of my experiences, I was called to help one individual. He was actually Mark Jimenez. He was winning a congressman. I was asked to help him. So when I met him, he said that he had basically neck and shoulder pain. So I was thinking to myself, oh, okay, it's a physical, a muscular element, vascular skeletal element. And so I started to do my hands-on work on him. And he would cry out, oh, the pain, the pain. Oh, okay, I'll just go a little bit lighter. Oh, the pain, the pain. And even if I go lighter, I was not able to work on him without him experiencing pain. And so I was thinking, oh, shoot, what am I going to do? I'm going to do energetic work. So I started doing energetic work. Oh, the pain, I can't take it, I can't take it. What should I do? What should I do? He was literally in pain, even energetic work. And by the time I was panicking, it's like, what the heck am I going to do? I can't even, do energy work on him. And then it dawned on me. I had my freaking ego in the way. I was the one who was portraying myself as the healer. I was the one who thought, I have to prove to him that what I know is the bomb or whatever, So basically what happened was, I centered myself and I set my ego aside. The moment that happened, there was a stream of energy that shot through my crown. And then all of a sudden, my hand continued with the energy work, but I became the witness to what was happening. I wasn't the one who was controlling where my hand was to go, but I was being guided. I was just there like, well, my hand's going this way, it's going that way, I'm not doing it. But I was still in that state now where I was, my ego was set aside. And it continued to push out the energy out the arm. And then I was guided, afterwards, I need to do some other stuff elsewhere. And then energetically, it kind of stopped. And I thought, okay, I guess that's it. Now, by that time, as I was doing the work, as I was seemingly pushing or pulling out the pain, you would cry out, oh, the pain, the pain.
You're good.
But by that time, because I was in that, healer's trance state, whatever he was saying was going in and out of the ear. I didn't say oh, okay, yeah, I'm good. No. By the time I was done, he was out cold. He was strong. And to me, that was as if he was inoculated with spiritual anesthesia. Out cold. But I sat there next to him and I contemplated on the whole event. And I gave my thanks, thankful that I was able to recognize that my ego. Because what happens actually afterwards, what happened was that he woke up, and he did this number. Ooh, I'm going to tell the others the good news. It was it was evident that whatever it was gone. As I sat there, I continued to sit there, and I realized that, my ego was in the way. And when the ego gets in the way, what happens is because you are wanting to prove something that you are good at, what happens is that you set yourself up for the failures of your own work. Because you think that you're going to be the one to heal, but then if you can't, it's going to happen. That's going to be your burden. So that's why it's always important. Also, I tell the students that they have to realize that, yes, they can have the tools. They have all of this gifts and knowledge. But they're merely the instrument, the vessel, to do the healing work. It's really up to the person that they are going to heal, between that person and, for example, the great creator, and whatever it might be. And that they're just the instrument to bridge the gap, so to speak, or to make it happen.
So, Ka Virgil, one of the elements of really being able to initiate one's journey into discovering healing and wellness is also looking for a practitioner that is humble, where they are able to relinquish their ego. You also mentioned traditionally starting to look at the as a researcher, the research that's out there, going to our public libraries that we're starting to see already having difficulty surviving. Are there other ways that our community can begin to initiate their own journey to look into the healing and wellness within their own family roots?
Yeah, you have all the uncles, the aunties, the grandmas, the lolos, or other relatives, extended family, others outside, you know, not necessarily related. It's important to really just to be like a sponge, to gather, to take in all aspects of the culture. Because one thing just didn't develop independently. People have to realize that it also is a result of all of these other factors that contributed to how this evolved. And in turn, how this had influence on these other aspects too. So that's why I always refer to that lateral way of thinking in order to find it, see the connections of all these different cultural, societal practices. And if you are just to keep on, if you have to jot down a list of questions that you want to learn about so that you have questions that you could ask, at least it's something systemized where you can go to this auntie, we interview them and then go to the next person, but yet you already have something that's established in regards to the knowledge that you're seeking to know. That's very valuable right there, because oftentimes what people are looking for is something that they can be spoon-fed. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, here's your information. Oh, okay, I want all the information. You know, they take that, then all of a sudden,
I think that's such a great reminder to, because there is the whole commercialized way about, I took body work manipulation, so now, and I'm Filipino, so now I can call myself a healer, which, there's that path, but to remind, with your reminder of just being able to ask our relatives, because there's such rich information there that, and stories that we could all learn from. I know just in my own experience, like my grandfather, who was in World War II, he had Hilots in his circle of people that he was, leading during the war. And they lived off of the jungle. They survived off of the jungle with all the different herbs and all the different foods that you could use for medicinal. I remember one time my grandfather, when I was a young boy and visiting the Philippines, and I had the halls of Montezuma going around my stomach. It was just like, it was the worst thing I've ever experienced up until about my young life. And I tried everything. And then my dad was like, go talk to your Lolo. So I asked my Lolo to help me out, because he's had experience with other Hilots or Ablons and just his own experience. And he says, oh, the eucalyptus tree, go there, grab some leaves. And I'm like, okay. And then I grabbed some leaves, and he gave it to some of the laborers to boil up. And he said, oh, drink this. And I drank it, and it was the worst tasting thing I've ever tasted in my life. But literally within like a few minutes, my stomach was just like, was no longer in pain. And I wasn't feeling like I, had to run to the restroom, every 2 minutes. But it was just an example of, him taking advantage of the environment. And I wish I had asked him more of those questions about how to live off of the jungle in that way, because there's so much, like you were saying, Cheryl, about Moringa
in Spanish, and Malunga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Malunga. All that stuff is native plants that are growing in the Philippines that, I wish I'd asked my grandfather more of these questions so that I could have learned more about that. But I think, again, to your point, it's such a great reminder that there is the traditional way, but then to remind ourselves to ask our relatives, our aunts, our uncles, our tutitas, our lolos and lolas about what their experiences are, because there's a richness in that culture that deserves to be carried on in the traditional ways, that gets to, those stories get to be passed on. I mean, we're a tribal community. Our stories get passed on through people, through our lineage.
Definitely. Even the Moringa. Moringa olifera, that's Latin. And even just that alone. Okay, so Malungay in the Tagalog regions, in Ilocos, it's Marungay. The curiosity of, okay, where did this come from? What did the plant, what's the background of the plant? I finally discovered that the term comes from the Tamil of southern India, where they call this Murungai, which basically means drumstick. And as if you look at the pods, you know, they look like drumsticks. You know? but that's what it's called. It's called the drumstick, Murungai. And according to one source, the Ilocanos learned to eat Murungai from the Hindus. The Hindus learned it from the Persians, and the Persians learned it from the Egyptians. That was supposed to be the... Because I soon discovered that even other Filipinos from different parts of the Philippines, they did not know what Marungay was, Malungay. They didn't know until the Ilocanos migrated in those areas, and that's... I heard it from... Bicolano and also somebody in Visayas, where their people, they didn't know what that was until it was introduced. And it's a two-way exchange, of course, because there are things that we learn from somewhere else that we didn't know about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the things also I do is I really start to look at all these different aspects if it comes to just that one plant. I look into it from, you know, what I did, what I presented was something that not everybody would think to do. And it really gives context to origins, to history, all these different aspects. Because once you start to learn all of them, then you start to gain a broader understanding of the healing practice. Or in this case, look at me and my weapons in the background. The combat traditions as well, which is another topic of itself, you know. But they're all interconnected. That's why it's important to really see things and realize that there is some kind of connection between these, and that really helps you to give or to gain a deeper understanding of the healing practice from a cultural standpoint, historical, sociological, psychological, spiritual, so many different angles to look at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my one of the things that I encourage people to do.
Wow, this has been really so enlightening and such an in-depth conversation. I mean, for myself, I could go down all these different rabbit holes that we went over. And so much about the wellness, and it is all very much connected. I think that's something else that we lose sight of, that everything is so well connected, more so than we realize. Now, being that we're a health and wellness podcast, we typically also like to ask our guests what their own health and wellness practices or routines are and what they consist of. Obviously, your school is based in health and wellness routines rooted in your family lineage and of the Philippine ancestral traditions. But curious, just in your own practice, if there's any other routines, any other practices that you use outside of the traditional stuff that you teach, nutrition, diet, any other type of self-care that you do?
Yeah, we want to figure out how you manage to stay so young looking.
Yeah.
I'll refer to my children's great grandfather. When he turned 100 years old, At the church, they interviewed him. There's like a special sermon all for him. And one of the questions they asked was, what's your secret to longevity? Are you a vegetarian? And of course, everybody's anticipation was for him to say yes. No, I eat meat. Talk about the congregation just bursting out of laughter. Everybody was thinking, oh, he's going to say vegetarian.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
that's one thing. Now, the following question was, what is your secret then? And the response, I do not get angry. That was his response. And that really shows that it may not necessarily be a physical thing that keeps you, healthy, but things on another level, on the mental, emotional, spiritual levels. And that's why I also really make sure that each of those aspects are included in the teachings. And one of the things that I emphasize is the physical aspects, because the school is largely based on both the combat and the healing arts. Because after all, it is the same anatomy, physiology is the same skeletal system. Therefore, we can see it as our soul or our spirit being incarnated into a physical body. But yet causing us to be this way is actually a combination, because if we didn't have the physical body, then how can we experience the other senses? smell, taste, what have you. But yet, at the same time, if we look at, if we don't keep the balance, then there can also be some repercussions. For example, there was a group of people who were deep into meditation, and they had the uncanny ability to really travel to other worlds, to other galaxies, what have you, to meet these spirit guides, what have you. But yet, what was happening was that they were becoming very ill on the physical level. They were more focused on the spiritual aspects, but yet their physical bodies were kind of like deteriorating. They were becoming sick. So that's why it's very important to really keep balance on these different practices. So that's why here in school, for those who are learning the healing arts, they have to learn the combative aspects as well. Because it's not only combat, self-defense against someone coming to attack you, but it's also defense against illnesses, defense against a psychic attack, emotional attack, all the different things. It is, so those who are also in the combat program, they also have to learn the healing aspects. So it is important to keep that balance. And sometimes there are some things that I learned along the way that I picked up from other cultures that I have included in the practice. Yet what I do at the same time is I find the equivalences of what we already have. Because we could have the practice, but we may not have the terminology, for example. So that's why in some traditions, they seemingly adapted the practices because of the terminology, but yet they may have already been practicing it. They just gained the terminology, so to speak. to give it context or definition. And what were the other question? What was the other question that you had?
I think you
if you have
answered that.
Yeah, well, I guess like if you aside from letting go of the anger and like what are other ways like that you know practice wellness personally?
Having a sense of humor.
There you go.
Having that's very 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 crucial. I mean, after all. What did they say? What's the famous saying? Laughter is what?
Medicine.
Laughter's better.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just imagine you have this all this anger, this fear, and everything. Those are chemicals that are developing. Yeah, that's the connection between psychosomatic illnesses, or even. What do you call it? Psychoneuroimmunological occurrences. So basically, for example, if somebody experiences some kind of trauma, there was actually one person I worked on. She said that she had a tumor in her sexual organ. And I thought, okay, I won't go directly in the area, but I'll work on surrounding areas that can influence that. So I went ahead and did the work. But then after I was done, something told me, no, I have to work on an energetic level. So I started to do the agnupos, which is the particular form of energy work that was developed. And as I started to do that, all of a sudden she broke down. In tears, crying. And all of this, is eyes closed. She's not witnessing what I'm doing. And then afterwards, she revealed to me that she was experiencing trauma because of sexual abuse when she was younger. And so something like that, it's in the psyche. You have the emotions that are involved. But yet, you also have the associated physical body part that's connected, and so you have that that association, that connection, and so it's possible that psycho, neuro, immunological response, the immunity of that area could have been compromised, so that in this case there may have been a tumor that developed.
Yeah,
and so that's why it's also important to see things from these different angles. It's not just the physical aspect, but also mental, emotional aspects as well.
Yeah.
So that's why if we have all of this fear and this hate, this guilt, this whatever emotion it is, but yet at the same time, this happiness, this joy, just imagine all of the chemicals that are being produced or being fed back into the body. Yet that will also determine if we're going to have a healthy state or a not so healthy state. So that's why I always like to. I can say that I'm very childlike. I am young at heart. I like to goof off.
Yeah,
but yet at the same time, there is that other aspect of me. For one thing, I'm a Gemini. But then I will. Put my foot down, like, no, it's like this, it's like that, or whatever. But yet, having that balance.
Yeah, it's part of that balance you're talking about, right? It's really interesting because the work that I do as emotional intelligence coach and teacher, like the things that you're talking about. So when you talk about being anger, for me, that's an inflammation of your ego, and it's an energetic inflammation. And if we continue to live in that energetic inflammation, that inflammation becomes physical and it can express itself as tumors or heart attack or high blood pressure. So being able to have that sense of humor, that laughter, is a different energy that counters that energetic inflammation. And it's when you have that insight, that understanding to be able to create a different practice and awareness about your energetic ways of being, it can really set you up for success on living a healthy life, because energetically you're cleansed, you're in healthy practices in that energetic way, and that translates to having a healthier body or a healthier outlook, a healthier projection in life. You get to live a fuller and more expressed life without having those negative energies being the dominating force and showing up as some sort of physical ailment. It's so interesting, again, the overlaps, and just, which is something that's really, really very awesome for me, in the sense of like the work that I do is somewhat traditional work, but having it being seen through the light of traditional Filipino traditions and Filipino ancestral perspectives, it's so awesome to really see the overlap and the commonalities in that. It's really, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you again, Ka Virgil, for talking with us and teaching us more about cultural perspectives on wellness. We look forward to witnessing your journey unfold with both your school and whatever future publications you have in store. This rich dialogue was just an introduction to the vast wealth of knowledge that you've shared with us in this episode, along with the modalities within our ancestral health and wellness lineages for our community to continue to explore. We didn't even get to talk about the Ka'ilikuan Indigenous School of Science, a School of Indigenous Science that you are co-founder of. So we hope to invite you back for another episode to discuss the different programs that you offer and its components. Just like we said when we first started this episode, this can easily be a series of episodes with varying foci. We'll continue to help share your upcoming opportunities as we stay connected in partnership, and hope to invite you back to discuss more.
And to our community, for our next episode, we will be talking with death doulas Michelle Mondia and Minda Sanchez as we discuss dying with dignity, intentionally aligned with Araw ng Mga Patay, Undas, translated into All Saints Day or Day of the Dead. Stay tuned as this episode will air on Wellness Wednesday, November 13th. And as we close, we'd like to acknowledge once again our guest speaker, Ka Virgil Mayor Apostol, our graphic designer and producer for our opening and closing track, Richie, our advisors, Allison De La Cruz, Rian De Los Reyes, and Safo Teologo, our community partners, SoCal Filipinos, This Filipino American Life, Rising Filipinas, Therapinai, and all of our community members for your shares and support. As always, we'll share more about our guest offerings on our IG stories and highlights. For permanent access with any of their upcoming events, be sure to follow us at Philippine X and Wellness on IG, Threads, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Don't forget to continue to hit the like and subscribe on our Philippine X and Wellness YouTube channel. Thank you, as always, for believing in us.
Be well, everyone. Continue to take care of yourselves and each other.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate you.
Matamo gid nga salamat. We'll be right back.